Do you get frustrated with porn filters that block too much or too little? Let me introduce you to Plucky, a new filter that you customize. Here's how it works. You set your own boundaries, deciding which websites are and aren't safe for you. If you're thinking, I'm not sure I can trust myself all the time, Plucky is made for you. It enforces the boundaries that you set, and it enforces them with steel, so you can't self-sabotage when tempted. Plucky puts your best self in control. People in over 100 countries use Plucky. Pricing is on a sliding scale, so it's affordable for everyone. For a free 30-day trial with no sign-up required, go to pluckyfilter.com. Take courage, take control, get Plucky. Good day, listeners. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In this episode, I welcome Sarah Segan to the program, co-founder of Parents Who Fight and an expert in helping parents navigate technology's impact on children. We dive into the importance of modeling healthy tech habits, delaying access to devices, and educating parents about online safety. Sarah shares her personal journey, emphasizing the need for intentionality in family tech use. We discuss the five phases of tech training. 1, modeling. 2, delaying. 3, protecting. 4, monitoring. And 5, releasing. Sarah provides practical tips and insights aiming to empower parents to create a safe and balanced digital environment for their kids. It's a really thoughtful conversation filled with valuable advice for modern parenting. To learn more about Sarah and the resources she offers, visit parentswhofight.com. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, please rate and review the podcast after listening, because this does help others to find it. Now, let's get into today's hope-filled conversation with Sarah. All right. Well, Sarah Segan, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And for our longtime listeners that are saying, wait a second, I don't remember saying that name. The reason I'm saying welcome back is because this is take two for us. We had some weird technology difficulties on the first time that we tried this. So we're going to do it again. And I'm so glad that you were patient and willing and gracious to come back.
Yes. It's like technology friend or foe, you know, you have to just walk in grace.
Well, it's a little maybe either paradoxical or ironic that we're going to be talking about technology today.
Right.
But before we get to that, I'd love for our listeners to just get to know you a little bit. So you can share, can you share with a little bit of your own story and kind of how you've gotten into this space of helping other parents, especially around issues of technology?
Yeah. So my husband and I have been married for 27 years. So we were full-fledged adults before the internet came to be a thing. We have two boys. We have a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old. But when they were little and they were in elementary school, great neighborhood school, we started hearing rumblings of things that were a bit concerning, that seemed like, man, their classmates like know a lot of stuff about very sexual graphic things. And eventually something came to the light that we were like, okay, that is pornography. We definitely can see, you know, that there is some influence, and just started talking to parents. Didn't really have any intention to start any kind of advocacy work, but we lived a pretty low tech lifestyle in our home. And that was largely to protect our marriage. You know, we had certainly been through things as adults that we wanted to shield our kids from when it comes to technology. So we had a, you know, one computer, but we knew it, I guess, more than other people about the dangers that were out there and kind of what you could do about it. So we just started talking to parents, started talking to teachers, and then eventually asked our school principal, could we do a simple parent meeting just to give parents like 4 free things they could do to protect their kids from pornography? And that was pretty revolutionary back in 2014 to be talking about pornography at the elementary school level in a public school. And so anyway, we had our first little Parents Who Fight gathering in January of 2015, you know, about a dozen parents there. And from there, we just kept getting asked to go places and share more. And we, you know, expanded our knowledge of online safety dangers past pornography to, you know, things like cyberbullying and some of the social media influences, tech addiction, all that. And so here it is 9 years later, and we have been educating parents through workshops, whether it's in person or online. We also do tech consultations, which is one of my favorite things to do, even though it's a little bit slower to just hit one family. It is more extensive. So you can go into a home and really help those parents lock doors that they weren't aware were unlocked. And when you leave that home, you know, like those kids are actually much better protected now than they were 24 hours ago. So I love doing that. I do a lot of that in our city. And here in 2024, we're really just trying to also shift some of our focus to the church, because we realize that the church is positioned to be one of the most effective change agents when it comes to large scale change about the way we view technology and the way we interact with it. So that's kind of where we are presently.
That's great. You know, I think sometimes when we just start talking about this issue of technology around parenting, you know, there's just this hyperventilation that starts to happen in a lot of parents. And what's interesting is I think about even my own generation, and I think, hey, I was one of those early adopters, and I thought, you know, I was so much smarter than my parents because I could set the clock on the VCR, you know, those
right.
kind of things. And half our audience doesn't even know what a VCR is. But anyway, and yet technology is growing and expanding at such a rapid rate that no matter how maybe advanced even some parents think they are around this technology, it can still just be so overwhelming. So can you give us first just kind of a high level view of what are we looking at in our culture today regarding technology? And, you know, what do parents maybe need to just know first off when they start engaging this whole topic?
Yeah, I think parents can fall into one of two categories. They can be totally paralyzed and afraid of the influences of technology, or they can be a little bit overly trusting of, like, my kid has good character. You know, we're not in a bad spot. We don't have that much. And I think the theme, if I could leave parents with one thought, is that, you know, feel free to trust the character of your kid, but do not trust the character of the internet, because the internet is made up of a billion things. And many parents don't even realize what backdoors exist. They don't realize that apps in and of themselves are like these little fortresses, that you really can't change all of what is happening in that castle unless the castle has said, yes, you can lock this or that door. So sometimes when it comes to apps like social media, you know, parents don't have a lot of recourse on how to protect their kids on those things. So we're definitely in favor of giving kids a much longer childhood. And I think if we could look at technology simply as a utility tool again and revert back to some of our offline old school analog parenting skills, there's far too much technology in our kids' world. And I think it has really hindered the connection that families have, our attunement with our kids. You know, are you looking them in the eye? Do you know when they're feeling anxious about something before they say it? Especially in those, you know, first like 12 years, you're really preparing for the battle of adolescence by understanding your kid's heart and praying for them. And, you know, there's so many things that give you a leg up in adolescence that have nothing to do with tech ninja skills. So we want parents to, you know, really take an evaluation of how much does our family rely on technology? How much time are we spending looking at each other's eyes and doing things together in the physical, real world, and getting back to that as much as we can?
Well, one of the things I love that you're saying here is that, you know, the universal principles of parenting travel across all time and space and, you know, culture and technology. Mm-hmm. And all that. There's these fundamental universal principles that no matter what age you're living in, or, you know, whether it be the, you know, the dark ages or the 20th right. century, these things are applicable. And I think that's a great place to start, because it gives parents kind of a sense of like, hey, you can do this.
Yes.
Like there's some confidence that can be built there by saying you're a human being in the long generation of human beings, and this right. is possible.
Right. It's like, you know, the passage in Romans 5 where it talks about tribulation producing endurance and character and hope. And hope doesn't disappoint. You know, hope doesn't just come on its own. It does come through tribulation sometimes. And we're learning, all of us together, how to effectively love our children God's way. And that is not without tears and conflict and correction. And so we do need to rest on the hope, because that's what all of this is unto, is the hope that we have in the Lord, and the hope that we have that He can strengthen us and enable us to be the best parent for our kid.
Yeah. So you guys have created this really simple but clear kind of map of these five phases of tech training for parents. I'd love for us to just walk through those and kind of unpack them. So, you know, tell us what these are and, mm-hmm. and how parents can and kind of navigate through them.
Yeah. So the first one is modeling. No parent gets out of that, really. You do that the whole way through. The second one is delaying. The third one is protecting. The fourth one is monitoring. And the fifth one is releasing. So if you go back to that first step of modeling, it's like, what are your tech habits? And not just your personal ones with your personal device. What things have you established as a parent in your home that are the values of our home? Do you have a TV in every nook and cranny, out on the porch, over the kitchen, in the living room, in the bonus room, in the bedrooms? You know, that's your prerogative to have, but understand you are sending a message to your kid about the prominence of those things. So if you look at, you know, even the nonverbal messages that you're sending by the way you use technology, one of the greatest ones I go back to, you know, we still don't have a smart TV. We're the last holdout. We don't want it. We're like, no. But back in the day when we all had tube TVs, there was a way that we had a special remote that locked our TV with a PIN code. So the kids couldn't get into anything. And this was 10, 15 years ago, right? And it sent a message to our kids that the TV is okay for you to watch when mom and dad are around. And so they really never watched TV when they were little without us there. So just doing simple things like that really kind of, you know, is a good example for your kid of how should we approach technology. So that's the modeling part.
Yeah, let's actually unpack that a little bit more, because there's a couple of things that I can imagine being some reactions. First of all, just somebody feeling a whole guilt trip right now, if they're one of the people that have 10 smart TVs in their house and all that, right. Going, oh my goodness, I'm almost feeling like I'm ruining my children. So I want us to address that. But also I want to address this overall idea of the connection between how parents are living their own lives and how that is training their kids. And the reason I think that's important is because I think sometimes there's a temptation for parents to say, Sarah, give me a tool that I can basically just throw at my kid.
Yes.
I don't need to bear the same kind of responsibility in my life as I'm expecting on them. So talk about some of those things. First of all, the guilt trip that people may be feeling because they got all this tech.
Right.
And then the need for understanding this modeling at maybe a much deeper level.
Yeah, that definitely the assessment of how many devices you have in your home can make any of us feel guilty. And we, one of the things we do as a consultation is we make them list out everything they have. And it's very sobering for families to do. And so, of course, we don't want to heap guilt on someone as if to paralyze them, but we have to do a reality check. And, you know, if we are going to live on purpose and parent our kids on purpose, we do need to think about those things, especially if, you know, devices accumulate over time. Nobody goes out and buys 10 TVs, right? You get one, then a couple years later, this one's on sale and you get one. And so, you know, really asking ourselves and, you know, as a family, setting those values of like, you know, how many TVs do we have? Is that normal? How many TVs does the average family have? Do we need all of these TVs? Do we watch all of these TVs? How much time do we watch? You know, really looking at the amount of time is like the critical piece, because all of us need to be held accountable to where our time is going. And that's biblical. You know, we are asking the Lord to redeem the time that we have here. It's a finite resource. So we do need to be mindful of how much time is spent in front of devices, even if our family is adjacent to us, you know, and what are we using it for? And that's a difficult thing with TVs, because they're rarely used for a utility. It is mostly entertainment. You know, your laptop computer, you could spend 8 hours on because you're working, right? You're earning a living for your family. There's no shame in that. So I definitely don't intend it to be something that measures guilt on people, but I do hope that there is a sense of, okay, I can look at my own use and the use I have allowed in my home, take a hard look at it, and make decisions about whether I feel good about how that's being used moving forward. So that would be the first thing. And then, you know, when it comes to looking at ourselves and what our phones, you know, what kind of role they have, I think parents are saying more and more, I am addicted to my phone. Mm-hmm. And that should really alarm us, because we can't help kids do something that we haven't done. So really just taking a look at how much time you have. Every phone has that number on there. They all do. Every device you have will tell you how many hours you've been on that device and the application. So it is something that we do need to be aware of, because we want our time and devotion to be going first and foremost to our families, the Lord, and the things that He has given us to do in this life.
Yeah, that's so good. So obviously the modeling piece is something that's foundational, right? That needs to be happening through all, and not just with tech, every part of our lives, we need to be modeling 100%. As parents what it looks like. But then this next phase is delay. Tell us more about that.
Well, delay is my favorite one, because it's the cheapest. You keep things out of your home longer. And it's interesting, because right now we're in this amazing cultural moment where a book has been published by author Jonathan Haidt, and it's called The Anxious Generation. And he has been doing research about morality and social media and all of these things for a number of years. And he published this book, and it's one of the, you know, it's the New York Times bestseller already. It's only been out for a couple of months, but his take as a secular psychologist, his man is not a believer, but his take is, if parents could do these four things, we could turn this ship around. If a third of parents could do these four things. And the first two have to do with delay. The first one is delaying a phone until high school. And that is a research-based recommendation. He has looked at that outcome of mental health for young adults and measured it against when they first got a phone. And he's also looked at brain development and the rapid rewiring that happens during puberty and the average years of puberty. So usually by the time a student is starting high school, they are 14, some are 15, and that is a better starting point for students to begin the journey of, this is a phone. And our take is, when you do get to the point of, they need a smartphone for basic use, we would urge parents not to have that first phone be an iPhone. I don't have time to go into all the reasons. There is an entire blog on our website about it, and I'm sure it will convince you or make you think long and hard about it. And that's ultimately just the functionality of the kinds of accountability and parental controls you can utilize on an iPhone are extremely temperamental. And if they weren't, I would not have a tech consultation business, because I'm going into homes and helping families who are at their wits' end, that they can't, they have all the settings correct, but but it's not blocking YouTube or the App Store or whatever. So that first delay point from Jonathan Haidt is delay the smartphone until at least high school. And his second one is delay social media until at least 16. Now, I live in the state of Tennessee, and Tennessee just passed the most restrictive state social media bill when it comes to children and minors. And it doesn't go into effect until January 2025. So I'm not sure how it's going to work yet. But essentially, this new law says if you are a minor in the state of Tennessee, you have to have your parents' permission to open a social media account or to retain a social media account. Previously in our the law of the land has been something passed in 1996. How helpful is that, right? That said that online companies couldn't collect private data from children. So the age was 13 to get into these online platforms. Well, we all know that's not been enforced. Age verification has been passed in some states. But basically, these platforms don't really have a way to prove that you're the age that you should be to be on there. So we agree with that statement. We've been saying 16 for a long time. We think it's the best ramp for social media is the latter part of high school, because social media has been created by adults for adults. It's not been created by teenagers. It's not been created by parents. It's been created by young 20-something people who want all the bells and whistles. And I think all of the, you know, receipts are in, and we know the harm that it's done to our kids. So we understand that, you know, as young adults, they're probably going to want to be on social media in some capacity. We think it's good to train them to do so and to have them fail while they're in your home. So we're not opposed to it. But there are definitely some challenges in making sure that you are making that as safe an experience as possible. Waiting till their brains get developed, that is a big piece of the puzzle. So for us, that delay piece is really delaying all addictive media. So that we would include YouTube in that. We don't think it's helpful for 3 or 4 year olds to watch YouTube. The algorithm, the rapid, you know, input is not good for their brain development. That also goes for video games, can be very addictive. So anything that is, you know, fast and inducing that dopamine drip for our kids, we really want to keep those things at bay. And in childhood, especially, so that's 0 to 12, really making sure that they do they have a love for reading? Can they do arts and crafts? Do they learn an instrument? There are so many things that are displaced by technology when we don't delay certain kinds of technology in our home.
Yeah. And I think there's a, you know, there's benefits of this idea of delay so far beyond just the technology. If you think about the sense of being able to regulate and slow yourself down, to have patience, to learn to wait.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I've done a lot of, I've read the Bible many, many times, and there's kind of these strands of themes that go all throughout, like from cover to cover. And one of them is a theme of waiting.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, we don't wait well in our culture today.
Right.
And how much more is this early onset of giving technology to children even making it harder for the ability to wait, to be patient, to not have it right away?
Yes.
And so I think the delay piece has benefit beyond just the tech part.
Definitely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Now, once you've said, hey, we're going to wait on these things, then the next phase you have is protect. Tell us about that.
So that, you know, it can refer to everything that is already in your home. Maybe mom and dad have a computer, like that was the case for us when our kids were little. We didn't have any addictive technology that our kids had access to. But we did have, you know, a computer that we had Covenant Eyes on. We had Google Safe Search turned on. This is before we had any filtered routers or anything like that. This is, you know, 12 years ago. But nowadays, pretty much every device that you can purchase out of the box has some protections that you can enable on the actual device. But our first, you know, big win for families is making it very normal for families to have a filtered router like a Griffin or an Eero. Mm-hmm. Something that you connect every device that's going into your Wi-Fi, and you can set time restrictions on it. You can block certain things on it. You can force Google Safe Search, force YouTube restricted mode. And that just being a staple of your home is, it also sends a message to your kids that all of this technology would be very dangerous if we didn't have some tools in place to help us rein it in. And for us, we started into that, that router filter phase when our kids had started with take-home technology from school, because we couldn't put any protections on that actual device mm-hmm. coming into our home. But once it hooked up to our Wi-Fi signal, then we could protect YouTube and say, no, you're not going to have YouTube. You need to do your math. And we could say the device shuts off at 7 p.m. or whatever. So that is a very valuable tool. And we want parents to realize that putting basic protections on your kids' devices or your family devices, it's not going to be 100%, right? Because there are lots of things that can go wrong with the way you set things up, or there's a bug or whatever, things conflict. But if you don't educate yourself as a parent to go down that road, you are leaving untold doors open that are direct access to very dangerous parts of the internet. So we do think it's one of the most important steps that parents know. Everything in our home, we've gone through a protection checklist, and we know that we have at least reduced a good deal of risk on this device.
Well, and I think the fact that you start with modeling, you're going to delay, you're teaching delay. The protect piece can make sense, because what you're doing is you're not saying, oh, you know what, and we're totally relying on these devices' protection systems to actually right. protect our hearts or protect our eyes.
Right.
Like, no. We're actually saying we're responsible. We're taking responsibility for yeah. how we're going to use these devices. How important is that in terms of the overall training that you're doing of your children, of saying, listen, never rely on a device to protect your integrity?
Yes. And we've told parents before, like, when it comes to parental controls, you are the best one. As a parent, you are the one who is going to have eyes, ears, intuition, protective conversations before your kids ever get onto social media and those kinds of things. So we do have a stewardship that is directly in our, you know, responsibility level as parents to steward these things, because they can be fun. They can bring a lot of things into our home. They can connect us with relatives. You know, there are many good things. We're not anti-technology, but, you know, we have to steward these and know that if there's ever a chance that this piece of technology is going to put my family at risk, it's a no-brainer. It's not worth it. And I have found it interesting, because there can be a reluctance to have courage to go without technology for parents. Like, well, I don't want to take the phone away. And what we are seeing is in the college years, our son is in college, and kids are ditching their smartphones on their own. Yeah. And these are kids whose parents were like, well, I don't want them to feel left out. It's like the parents maybe didn't know how to have courage in that moment. They were maybe afraid. And the students are becoming young adults and going, I don't need this. I don't need this. So I think, you know, as parents, we have to realize that our attitude towards technology, our stewardship, and our authority, you know, to really set the tone in our home, like, this is ours. This is ours to give to our kids. And you might be surprised that one day they will come back and thank you, as my 20-year-old has. And he is very involved in fighting to protect kids online. So he is now realizing how much he was protected from, so that he can now in turn help other people realize you can have courage to do this. Your kids won't hate you forever. They might hate you for a short amount of time, but that's okay. You know, we're bulletproof. We can withstand some of that.
We joke about our son. So my son just graduated college, and we've kind of dubbed him. He's Mr. Antisocial. And the reason we say that is because he's never been on social media.
Wow. That's awesome.
Even when he was in, like, you know, high school or whatever, he just never had, he was like, I don't need it, you know? So he's like, I've got friends. I don't need them. And we always thought we felt like he was always like 10 years ahead of everyone else, of his peers, in maturity in terms of being going, yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah.
But then the next phase you have here, the fourth phase, is monitor.
Right.
So tell us what's going on there.
Yeah. So once our kids are really ramping up in their maturity, and they need to learn how to steward, you know, they need to know, be able to use their phones eventually as teenagers as a utility device and a productivity device. But that doesn't mean that we just, you know, throw every protection out the window of like, well, you're almost an adult, so good luck. You know, as training, we have to be able to get some intel. And I always go back to like my very first job as a cashier, I was not counting that cash drawer without a manager over my shoulder for a while, because they were making sure that I knew how to do it. But it also was accountability. And if anything went wrong, they could say, well, yeah, I didn't catch that either, you know? Mm-hmm. So with our kids, there are a number of ways that we can really get a pulse on how they're doing. One of our favorites is Covenant Eyes. That's something we've used for a long time. And that does block the most egregious, you know, content or anything we've blacklisted. But it also just, you know, I was saying to my son how awesome it is to have, you know, years go by and be like, man, you haven't got a report that's negative in so long. Mm-hmm. And it actually makes me trust you more. The fact that I get that little snapshot at the end of the week, I'm like, you know, I am really proud that you are doing so well. And I think that the accountability piece is important, because I think it's important for kids to know mom and dad haven't grown out of accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, we want our marriage to be strong, so we have accountability on our devices. You can look at my device at any point. If you want to see how much time I've spent on Instagram, you know, I'm happy to show. I don't know if I'll be proud of that number or not, but I'm not going to keep you out of these things. You are my family member. So we can take some of the heat off of like, you're just spying on me, you're checking on me, you don't trust me. It's like, actually, I really want to know where you're strong and where you're weak. So I don't have to spend a bunch of time micromanaging these areas that you're rocking it. You know, and monitoring isn't always just like the most problematic content. It can also be, you know, like I realized one of my kids was not getting a very good grade in class. And I was able to log into his Google Activity page and see that he was largely watching YouTube at school during that class. And so when it came time for the parent teacher conference, I let the teacher know, hey, you have my permission to bust his chops on his computer and watching YouTube. She said, I don't think he's watching, and I don't think he's doing it. I said, he is. I have the timestamp. That's why he has a bad grade in your class. So, you know, it's a helpful tool. If you don't use it to weaponize, like you're in big trouble now, kid,
yeah,
but you just use it to be like, man, where are you struggling and where are you strong? You know, I've understood more about some of my kids' political questions in a political environment. Now that they're old enough to really understand some things, I'm like, oh, I probably should talk to them about that, because they're asking the internet about these certain political topics. And so it's a great way for me as a mom to just really stay current and that, you know, just talk to them about it. Hey, I noticed that you know, Googled this thing. Let's talk about it. And it's not something I come in with anger or consequences. It is simply a tool to know how are they doing.
Yeah, I think the monitoring piece, it's one of those things where, you know, we're told in scripture to walk in the light. And
right.
So all it's doing is saying, hey, that's a value in our home. We're not going to have any secrets. There's not going to be anything hidden. We're not going to do things behind some kind of closed tech environment. And it's like, we're in the light. So,
right.
And I think that goes back again to modeling the fact that saying, hey, your parents are just
yes.
as much in the light as you are.
Yes.
And obviously there's even age appropriate ways that we can
totally.
Share vulnerability with our children along the way of our own journeys and all that. But it's important to establish that everybody's abiding by the same principles in this house when it comes to technology.
Right. Right. And you can't, you know, the protections you have for a child are different than the protections you have for a teenager, because they do need to learn how to self-govern. But we also, you know, so we're not going to just close and lock every door, but we do want to see what doors are they opening out of negligence because they just don't know. And what doors are they opening out of curiosity? And, you know, we have to just kind of get a pulse. If there's no, if we're not blocking it from them, you know, what is their ability to walk in strength? So one example of that would be, you know, with our kids, you know, introducing social media, it's like those first apps are going to be on mom's phone too. And I'm not making myself known on there. I'm not saying a lot on there. I am just like, okay, that was great. I saw that my kid knew to block that person. That's awesome. And I may or may not say anything about it, but it's just giving me an understanding of like, okay, they're ready. They're ready. They're 17. They're almost out of the house. They're ready. And they are still going to fail, but you know, they're going to fail in a safe place. And I'm going to be a safe voice to talk to about those failures and learn from them. Nobody learns without making mistakes. So we want them to learn.
Yeah. So that gets to the fifth phase of release.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sounds pretty obvious, but tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously by the time your kid is graduating from high school, you know, many of them are venturing out either into, you know, a full-time job. They're not going to be under your eye sockets all the time, right? For us, our oldest went off to a college campus. So we got some great advice from an older dad who said, you know, you keep all technology out of their room until graduation phase. And then we had about 3 months to let him keep a computer and a phone charging in his room because he was going into a 12 by 12 dorm room. No place to charge those things. You know, this is it. And he was like, it's going to be no problem. You know, I can totally do this. In fact, it's preposterous that I haven't been able to do this yet. And he was very surprised during that summer about how hard it was. And, you know, we talked about it. We tried not to shame him for anything, but just like, let's be real. And then, you know, on his breaks coming home, he was plugging his phone in the bathroom or downstairs or wherever because he could. Because he finally had a house to, you know, be able to do that. So releasing is really getting our kids to a place where they are, you know, adults who are with adults holding each other accountable. I was so thankful my son had an awesome roommate and they had those conversations. They had conversations about, are we going to have a TV? Why or why not? What would be good about it? What would be bad about it? They chose not to. So it's really, you know, allowing our kids to start making their own choices to protect themselves. And if they come to you and say, hey, mom or dad, I still really need your help with this. Great. But we can't overstep, you know, the technology that they're using when they're adults. They have to learn how to use it well. And that's a balancing act in that those transition years. But you know, you've got a son who's graduated from college. So, you know, it is a difficult thing as a parent to let go of many things. But the technology piece is one that it's like, if we've done our job, if we've done these five phases, hopefully by the time we get to that release phase, we know they've got some trusted friendships in their life they can go to if they do struggle. My door is always open, but I don't have the same role anymore. You know, so.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Sarah. So where can our listeners and viewers go to get more information about what you all are doing?
Yeah, our website would be one of the primary places, parentswhofight.com. We also are pretty active on the daily on Instagram mainly. And that is something where from the beginning, one of our thoughts was, you know, we don't do Parents Who Fight full time necessarily. We both have other jobs. This is our passion project, but we are going to share the good things that other people are doing because that's something we can do quickly without getting sucked into social media ourselves. And so pretty much every day on Instagram, I'm posting something to the story that is from somebody else who's awesome, who cares about online safety. It's not the Jesse and Sarah show. My husband and I do it together, but we're like, no, we're partnering with people who are doing amazing work. So we are sharing stats. We are sharing new technologies. There's great retro technologies that are coming out. I get sent emails and messages from these, 25-year-olds who are inventing the most amazing things to get them unaddict Gen Z, which I love. So we're sharing all of that stuff on the daily on Instagram. If you go to our website, you'll be asked if you want to receive, periodic updates from us. It's maybe one a month to tell you about exciting things that are happening in the movement. Maybe there's, legislation that we want you to call your senator and say, hey, please support this. There's a lot of exciting things going on, and we'd love to have you guys connect with us. And we also do a Zoom consultation. So, no matter where you live in the country, if you're like, okay, I have 12-year-old triplets, how do I do this? Those are the calls that we take, and we just walk parents through kind of setting up some strategy. And we'd love to help you with that.
Yeah. Well, this has been so good. Thank you, Sarah, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to parents and get them further down the road.
Oh, yeah. Well, folks, we are going to be putting a lot of information in the show notes today to just help you take your next steps in terms of being able to help both yourself and your kids to navigate just kind of the chaos around technology, but to do with confidence and clarity. And hopefully these five phases that kind of form this map will help you today. But please reach out to us. We want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.